Little over a month ago, Klára Poláčková was on top of the world, literally, as she became the first Czech woman to ever reach the peak of the world's highest mountain, Mount Everest. Klára, who is 28, is now back home in Prague and told me all about her incredible experience when we met the other day at a city centre cafe. But first, she told me a wee bit about her background.
I've been born in Prague, so right by the river, actually, so that's my home city. But for the last 4 years, I've been living in London in the UK, so I'm coming back home again now and trying to settle down a bit again.
What did you do in London?
That was a mixture. I started in the advertising agency, and after a while, when you get tired of the environment and you need a bit of a change and also a professional change, I started to work for the Department for Constitutional Affairs and then for the Ministry of Health.
How did you first get into climbing?
Climbing, I think more when did I first get to the mountains, which is something I'm very, which is my first sport and my great love. When I was small, my parents were taking me up to tiny mountains in Czech Republic, and then we started to go skiing more towards the Alps, and you started to discover a bit higher peaks, and then more recently, more towards the climbing, that came more about 5 years ago, really, when I met a group of guys who were really crazy about this stuff, and they started to take me up with them, and I guess I just joined in, and it just got me completely.
How did you first get the idea of climbing Everest?
Everest came last year only. I've been climbing another 8,000 meter peak in the Himalayas, and I've been on Choyu before, which is 8,200 meters. And I've met a great guide there, Tashi Tenzing, who's at the time he was guiding us up to the peak, and we became really good friends. And after we climbed together this one, we got back to Kathmandu to this beautiful cafe on the top of the roof, and we're just thinking, okay, what next? And once you reach 8,000 meters for the first time and you succeed, you have this sort of like thinking, okay, so let's try a little higher. And then came the offer from Tashi saying, why don't we give it a go? Have you ever thought of Everest? And that's where it came for the first time, and that's how it started.
Just to digress for a second, your guide has a famous grandfather, I believe.
True, he's a grandson of Tenzing Norgay, who climbed in 1953 with Sir Edmund Hillary for the first time on Everest. So climbing is truly in his family, for sure.
What about the training and the preparations for climbing Everest? What did that involve?
I think that's got two parts to it. I think one is you need to be experienced enough from climbing before. You need to be used to the altitude. You have to know basic climbing techniques, and the second bit of it is your physical condition. So that was a harsh training for about 6 months, rather intensively, prior to the climbing.
When you actually did it, when you set off, how difficult did you find it in reality?
Very honestly, this was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, and both physically and also psychologically, this is very difficult. Almost 2 months you spend on the mountain throughout the whole expedition, so It's been tough.
Did you ever have any particularly hairy moments or moments when you thought, I want to go back, I can't take this anymore?
I don't think there was a true crisis that came really, because otherwise I don't think we would have made it. But I think throughout the whole expedition you have moments when you just think, gee, it's just, I'm fed up, I'm tired, I need a shower, I want a proper bed, I miss my blanket and stuff. So you have those moments when they come, and it's just the more important thing is to get over that. So
tell us about the actual summit itself when you reach the peak.
Summit day, that's pretty amazing, but to be honest, you're so tired and really exhausted, and as they say, getting to the top is just halfway. You also need to get down, which is the more difficult bit, to be honest. So we spent about half an hour on the summit. You look around and you see, thinking, gosh, all those peaks I see are actually lower than where I am now, which feels great. But it's pretty cold as well. It was about minus 30 up there, and my hands were completely frozen at the time, and I was just saying, God, we need to get down. So it's the moments of when you realize, I think that comes much, much later.
Was it at night when you reached the peak of Everest?
We actually started to climb in the evening. We started at 9 p.m. and climbed the whole night, and we reached the summit at 7 o'clock in the morning. And then, again, it takes another 6 or 8, up to 8 hours to get down again to Camp 2. 2, which is sort of like a reasonable altitude where you can have a bit of a rest again.
I also read that you made a phone call from the peak of Everest, which certainly makes a change from I'm on the train. Who did you call and what did you say?
We had a satellite phone with us, so I made a very quick phone call home to my sister saying that we are right, we're still up there. But from what I understood when she spoke to me afterwards, she said actually that scared them quite a bit because I didn't sound like I'm having a great time up there. So they were a bit worried and waiting for another 8 hours before I'd called again saying I'm actually safe and down again. But yeah, I called home with my sister.
Did your fingers actually become frostbitten?
I had a little bit of trouble with my fingers, that's true. So a few of my fingers, you can still see. Well, the listeners can't see. But that's kind of coming back to normal again. It wasn't too serious, but it's the moments where you stop the feeling in the top of your fingers just is gone, pretty much.
When you were on Everest, a couple of days later, the mayor of Prague, Pavel Bem, also reached the peak. Did you meet him at all on your trip?
It was pretty close because I got a news via the satellite phone from Prague that it looks like that maybe he may be summiting on the same day, but he was climbing from the other side. I was climbing from the north face, the Tibetan side, and he was climbing south face from the Nepal. So there was a tiny chance that we may meet on the summit, which would be amazing, but I missed him by 2 days. But we met later, in fact, afterwards in Kathmandu, in a much nicer setting, in a small pub, and had a beer, and that was great.
You are the first Czech woman to ever reach the peak, but he is the mayor of Prague, he's already well known. Did he perhaps a little bit steal your thunder when he reached the peak just after you?
I don't think it's about stealing any thunders and stuff. That's not why you climb. I think the climbing is very individual and very personal experience in a way, so the whole sort of media coverage that has been created around it. It's just happening, but I don't care who's getting more or less coverage. That's not important.
Also around that time, a Czech climber died, a man called Libor Kozák. Were you aware that he had died?
This is very unfortunate thing that happened on the mountain, and that happens. I knew him. We met on the mountain, and we spent amazing 3 weeks together, and he was a really good friend, so It's not easy to talk about that. I learned the fact that he died up there the second day after we reached the summit, when we were getting down from North Col, and a member of another expedition who was closer to him at the time told me that this happened. So this is very unfortunate.
Generally speaking, what's the atmosphere like between climbers when you're in the base camp or halfway up the mountains, so to speak?
I think it's generally very friendly, to be honest. I mean, everyone is there, everyone is suffering, everyone is sort of on the same wave trying to get ready and hopefully try to summit at some point during their expedition. So when you're in the base camp, it's sort of a small village where people meet. If you're not in the phase when you're actually climbing up there, you have a lot of time to walk around other camps and talk to other expedition members. So that's fantastic. That's really nice.
I've read often and heard often that Everest these days can be quite crowded, and also that there's lots of rubbish around the place. Is that true?
About the rubbish bit, no. I have to say, but that was a very pleasant surprise, to be honest, because that's what I've heard before as well. When we got there, I think now every expedition that goes up the mountain is very responsible in this respect and knows that whatever they bring with them, they also take away when they leave. So I think this has changed a lot, and the mountain has been also cleaned a lot. There was a Japanese expedition, in fact, which been doing this for the last few years, that they've been coming towards the end of the season, and their aim was not to climb to the top, but it was actually to take away the rubbish from the mountain. And they've been doing this for a long time. And this year, I spoke to the guy towards the end, and he said, I feel that my mission is finished, because this is the last year we're doing this, and I don't feel the need that this is needed anymore, because the mountain is pretty much clean, and people are responsible and don't leave the rubbish behind anymore. So I think this is great now.
After this long and rather intense experience, did it take you long to get used to normalcy again, to normal life? And also, I'm curious, what did you most enjoy when you came back to civilization?
The second bit is pretty easy. I think as every girl, like, kind of, you like to sort of, like, a bit of a hygiene is missing on the mountain. So the thing I was really, really missing was my first shower. So after we got back to Kathmandu, I got to the hotel, and I was like, I think I spent there almost an hour just standing there, and the water kept dropping all over, and I'm just like, this is great. And getting back to the normal world again, I think that that's part of the whole thing. Like, for a while you're climbing and then you get back to, you can't escape, and I need to get back to my normal living. I miss my family, I miss my friends, so, and it's great to be in Prague in summer, so I think the entry is not too bad.
You've just moved back to Prague. What's next for Klára Poláčková?
Next is to finally unpack. I still have boxes all over from that we moved over from London. I didn't have time to do that. And a little bit of traveling around Czech Republic and maybe going down somewhere to the sea and just relax. And towards the end of summer, I think I'll be looking for another professional sort of challenge and find something new that I will enjoy work-wise.